Hello.
Hi, Paul.
Oh, hello, Rich. Hi. How are you?
Yeah, not bad.
Good. Shall we just launch straight into it, then?
Yep, you have to do your disclaimer bit, and then...
Do me disclaimers. Where's this? I'm Paul Scott, and today I'm talking to Richard Crowe about shares. We're not giving recommendations nor financial advice, so the emphasis is on people to do your own research and make your own decisions. So the audio cart is for general interest and entertainment only. And if you assume also that Rich owns shares in some or all of the companies he's going to talk about. Okay, shall we go straight into the list of stocks that you emailed me then, Rich?
Okay, yeah. We'll talk about first, which we go, some of the ones that we've spoken about before, really, I suppose. So,
Shall we start
with Carpet Right?
Yeah, good one. That's CPR, particular.
And I think you'll remember we spoke about these a couple of times, and they've gone from a nice low back in October. This was October 2014, so it's quite a while since I bought into them. And it was in December that there was a trading update, and they absolutely took off. And I think that was the point I bought in there around December 2014, and they went from about £3.20 up to something like £6 over the course of 6 months. Well, a few people have asked me, actually, why have they come back off so much? And
But they've come all the way back down, haven't they?
All the way back down.
£3.30 off, yeah.
It's quite amazing, and I'm sort of bemused, as most people are, as the actual company themselves has put out good trading statements. the CEO bought £100,000 worth of shares at £4 back in the year just gone, 2016. The FD bought about £20,000 worth or so at the same time, both spending £4 a share. The shares have continued to fall, and they're looking like an absolute screaming opportunity to me at the moment. So I don't know what you think on that, but they're the brokers have continued to upgrade their forecasts. So they're currently trading now at 4p of about 13.
Yeah. I mean, I think for the first time, the first time ever, actually, it's looking reasonably priced, in my opinion. I mean, the most recent trading update seems to have been end of January, doesn't it? And that's pretty good, 6% like for likes in the most recent 4 weeks. As you say, broker forecasts have been increasing. The current year, it's a May year end, isn't it? 2nd of May. So the forecast is for a P of about 17.9 on this year's earnings, but the following year it drops to 13.3, which, you know, is actually starting to look quite interesting, I think.
That's pretty good growth as well. I think, you're talking about 25, 30% growth year on year that they've been achieving. They've got no debt.
25% growth? On profits, you mean, not top?
Yeah, profit growth, yeah.
Yeah. And the dividends, they haven't paid dividends since 2011, I note.
No.
Looks as if those are starting to come back in now. The balance sheet's sorted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
interesting.
I think I think has been happening is Neptune have been selling down.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if that's coincided with the old founder Lord Harris, and whether he's been selling some of his stake. But it's been relentless. It's been relentless selling there for quite some time, and I just wonder whether they're actually switching their priority from consumer stocks to cyclicals, and whether they're changing sector. And they went in quite heavily, Neptune, to about 18% of the company, and they've sold down a fair bit.
What level are they at now, Rich?
Sorry.
What level?
I think they're around at about 16 or 17% was the last one. I think they were up to about 22%, maybe.
So
there's a trading statement coming in March, end of March, and so I think probably when that trading statement comes out, there'll be an opportunity there that might present itself.
Yeah.
So it's probably one to watch out for the trading statement there.
Yeah, no, I like the look of this. I might do some more digging on this. I mean, I noticed they talk about an opportunity from interest-free offering, which you mentioned some time ago in one of our previous interviews. Can you expand on that?
Well, they never used to do interest-free credit. They always used to charge people for it, whereas like SCS and DFS do the interest-free credit. That's just what people want, really. You know, your average guy goes in the shop and thinks, oh, you know, I'll buy it, but I'm going to have to pay, you know, 5 or 6% or whatever over such and such a time. It's off-putting for them. But if they can sort of see that they're going to get it at the price, they're going to get it now, and they're not going to pay no interest. And basically, that interest is built into the price anyway. The price is jacked up to cover the interest that the guy's paying when you go in.
Right. So does Carpet Rights fund that itself? So is it building up a bigger and bigger debtor book, or does it use a sort of external company and pay them a 5% fee or something?
I think they use an external company. I don't think they're taking the debt risk on themselves, no.
Right, okay. So, no, yeah, that looks interesting, this one. I think I'll take a deeper look at that. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
I didn't realise it had come down so much.
No, and I know we've spoken. I actually sold quite a lot up near just short of £6.
Oh, well done.
I always sort of like top slice. When a stock sort of doubles, I tend to sell a bit at about 50% and another bit at about a double and then sort of hold on. So I sold a bit up there and then I held on. Yeah, with hindsight, I'd have sold the whole lot up there if I'd known it was going to come back to this sort of level. But I think I got stopped out at about £4.40 on some others that I had. I was left holding a few more just after that, because I couldn't close the whole position. And I've just held on, and I've been buying more from £4 onwards.
Well, you called it right last time it was down at this level, so...
Yeah, I think it might be a surprise in there, a nice positive surprise in there for the market when they come. So that's maybe one to keep your eye on.
Yeah, I think I'll pick up a few of those before the trading announcement. Not a huge amount, but thanks for that, Rich. Okay, next one, should we go to Greg's?
Greg's, yeah, that's been a great one again. They've had a recent trading update and they've done really well. I've actually sold out of Greg's now.
Oh, have you?
I took my last profits were on the back of their last trading statement.
Yeah.
And they're looking still decent value, but there's a lot in the price now that's, you know, you can probably find faster gains elsewhere. For a safe long-term hold, and you know, one that's going to pay a decent yield, they look like you know, a nice one to have for someone that would be looking to have a core holding of something that has decent returns, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at this one when it dipped just below £10 a share back in January.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, actually, it's looking quite good value at that level. But while I was busy pondering it, it shot up to £12. And I saw it broken out. And the problem is, it's a great business, I agree with you, really, really good business. But the problem I found was looking at the forecast, the growth is sort of tailing off now as it's sort of kind of reaching maturity, isn't it, in terms of the number of sites it's in.
The good thing is with stocks like that, you've got to find them when they've got sort of like, you know, growth of 30 and 40% and they're trading on a PE of 10 or something, you know, around that level.
Yes.
And then once they get to this point, then they're trading on a PE of about 16 or 17 and the growth rate has come down to like 10%.
Yeah, so exactly.
You've got to, you know, you want to get more than one for one with your growth and your price that you're paying, really. In my
opinion,
you know, you want to be... If you get...
So you follow the Jim Slater PEG ratio closely.
PEG ratio, yeah, 1-to-1. Better than 1-to-1 is always a better price to pay for a stock, I think, if you can pay it. There are occasions where it's worth paying more, but you know, they've got a big sort of high growth or a special story behind them. But
that makes sense. Okay.
I think Mothercare was one that we went on last time
What's up with that? From memory, they did well. They did well in the UK, but badly overseas.
They were doing good overseas, and they were doing badly in the UK. Now they're doing badly overseas, and they're doing better in the UK. So they should benefit really from the weaker pound, I think, for the overseas operations. That should show up better for the. For the company, you know, with a weaker pound, but then some of the stuff they buy for the UK is probably.
I was going to say, they're probably buying from the Far East, so that would put up their cost prices as well.
It's probably a wash, you know, for the company as a whole, what the currency does.
Yes.
And brokers have not been sort of over optimistic with their guidance there so far, so it's sort of drifted off. And I think I took some, like I say, at 50%, I took a bit of profits, and at a doubler, they're sort of then wanted to take profits, a bit of profit on turn. I held the rest that I held up until a couple of weeks ago, and a lot of guys I was speaking to had all capitulated, and I thought, well, there probably is in this market better sectors to be in than retail up until probably September time.
So you're out of Mothercare at the moment, are you then?
Yeah, I'm currently out of Mothercare. The last one went on a couple of weeks ago.
Although looking at the forecast, I mean, it's on a forecast PE of 13.4.
Yeah, it's pretty reasonable.
Which doesn't look too bad.
No.
Yeah.
It's they're the sort of company that when they do get their act together, I'm sure it's going to be one of those that actually takes off. But I think there's still, a lot of work there to be done. It's not going as fast as envisaged, really. Although it is getting together.
Yeah, with these turnaround things, I mean, I've had a similar issue with Flybe. The turnaround looked great on paper, but it's just taking forever for it to actually happen, and the results are really not coming through as particularly strongly. But obviously that's been reflected in the price. I mean, you were in Flybe a while ago, weren't you?
Yeah, I've played around in Flybe a couple of times, and I don't know, they just always seem to, since they've had a new board there, they seem to manage to steal defeat from the jaws of victory so many times. They sound as if they've got their act together. They've got rid of the excess planes that they sat on, and you sit there and think, well, that's the moment where they're going to go. And he sings a good song, but it just doesn't do that. It's not doing what it should do, really. And I think probably their hedging policy wasn't as good as it could have been.
No.
And so they've not benefited as much as some of the other airlines have from their hedging. But as that plays out going down the line, it may be a better story down there.
Yeah, I mean, that's my thinking too, is that, the fuel hedges at high prices are sort of expiring now, aren't they? So
yeah.
That should, hopefully. I mean, I'm very frustrated with Flybe, but I'm sticking with it, because I think, the key reasons for holding it, the turnaround, still holds. It's just, taking longer than expected.
Yeah.
But, okay, should we go back to some of your stocks then?
Okay.
Stiles and Wood, maybe?
Which one, sorry?
Stiles and Wood.
Oh, Stiles and Wood, yeah. That's quite an interesting little one. They should have a trading statement. Their results, rather, within the next sort of six weeks, I would think, by the end of April. I think a lot of people may be waiting for them for in June, but last year the results came out in June on the basis, I think they were late for some reason, but they're usually out in April.
Right.
That's a stock that looks really cheap to me at the moment. I think they've already said that they've got the backing of this business growth fund. Do you know the company at all?
No.
They're set up by the government. They were set up by Vince Cable.
Mm.
And it was to give smaller companies a boost to fund smaller companies during the crisis.
Oh, okay.
And among the companies that they funded was Victoria Carpets.
Oh, gosh, that's been a phenomenal success, hasn't it?
And that was a raw way success. And the other company that they went into was Stiles and Woods. It's backed by Royal Bank of Scotland. Well, Stiles and Woods, they're forecast to do 29 pence earnings this year on a price of £1.85. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at a PE of just over 6.
Yeah. Although it's got reading up on the RNSs, it's got an unusual capital structure, hasn't it, with convertible loans and...
They did away with it. They converted a lot of those a little while back, so it's nearly all, there's hardly any preference shares left in there now.
Oh, that's good news. Henderson did quite a clever sort of refinance restructuring deal, didn't they?
They're in there as well. They've got a big stake as well, so... And it's one that the company's kept promising, to deliver. And in all honesty, they were going through a tough time during the crisis, trying to be a company that was recovering. Just as they were getting a recovery going under a new boss during the crisis, it's been, an uphill battle. As you're coming out of the woods, you just enter an even thicker wood. And they... But he's managed to do it. The new CEO there has managed to, he came from Bovis Lend originally, so he's got a bit of experience in the construction sector quite well. And they seem to be, they delivered last time on their 25 pence that they promised, and 25 pence EPS last year. And I think if they do 29 PE EPS this year, then the 37 next year puts them on a really low PE of about 5 or so.
Yeah, that's right. The only drawback with this type of company, though, is they're very low margin, aren't they? I mean, I'm in Waterman and T. Clark, which, I mean, there are, you know, considerable differences, but same sort of sector. And you only need, you know, one big contract to go horribly wrong in some way, and it kind of, you know, it wipes out the whole year's profit and the next year, you know. So is that not a worry with this type of firm?
It's probably a bit of a concern, but I just think that the industrial and construction side of companies are starting to pick up at the moment. And I think if anything, they're more likely to, you know, surprise to the upside. A lot of these companies, like you say, Waterman, I think that's another one that's sort of one that's likely to, you know, do better than expected rather than worse at the moment.
Their CEO is very upbeat, Waterman's CEO. I interviewed him in October, and he said, you know, his order books and pipeline is saying at least two very, very good years sort of on the way in commercial property building. You know.
Yeah, Stiles and Woods have said a similar thing, and they're also getting quite heavily into solar panel technology and installing solar for a lot of big companies.
Yeah.
So, like, they've moved away from the office refits and stuff like that. They're targeting better work, really. So
better margins. Yeah. And I saw they've RNS'd, when was it, 15th of December, a framework agreement with Lloyds Bank over 5 years to refurbish branches.
Yeah.
10 or 15 million a year revenue over 5 years. So that's quite useful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, that one does look potentially interesting. Yeah,
well, on the small cap side of things, might be worth keeping on the radar.
Yeah, and the ticker. The only thing we mentioned, the ticker. The ticker for Stiles & Wood is STY.
That's it.
So should we look at Goodwin next? That's GDWN.
Yeah. Let's tackle the little small caps first. The I don't know if you saw the trading statement on there on.
Looked at it 10 minutes ago. That was the 17th of March. Pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, and I'd bought them about a week before. I'd noticed the chart was just making one of those nice little bowls that I like so much. And I quite like the sector, actually, at the moment. I've been buying a lot of engineering companies like Weir Group and Aggreko. Who else we got in there? AMEC Foster Wheeler. A couple of others, and those stocks have risen over the last month. They're up 30-40% over the last month, which is like a cracking sector. And I think that sector is the actual one that's, you know, like senior as well. That's another one that's gone up quite well.
Mm.
The whole of that sector seems to be about to take off, I think, on the back of the miners. I think the miners have sort of like set the cyclical sector alight, and you would expect when miners start to take off and oil stocks, that's the beginning of a cycle rather than the at the end of a cycle. So as much as people keep saying, oh, you know, this is a bear market and we've had such a bad time, you know, the FTSE 250 is flat over 2 years. It's still where it was 2 years ago. So I don't feel that we've actually had the bull market that people sort of think. I think we've had a sideways market where some sectors have done well and some haven't.
Yeah, yes, good point. I mean, the only thing with these, say with oil shares, a couple of friends of mine who are experts in this, you know, they spent the last 15, 20 years doing mainly just oil shares. What they're doing is they've been, you know, buying the lows and then selling on the 30% rallies.
Right.
Because, you know, their view is, over the last year or so, all shares have tended to just come back down again. So is there not a risk that you get the same sort of thing with these oil-linked engineering firms?
No, I don't, because I think the sector has bottomed. I think we've seen the bottom in oil, and I think we've seen the bottom in miners, because I bought a lot of miners about a month ago when, if you look at some of the charts, like Anglo American, that made a little bowl, and Greggs, Kaz Minerals and Vedanta, they all made like little bowls on the chart, and it was the same time that I was noticing that zinc was bottoming out and aluminium was bottoming out as well, and those charts were both making bowls as well.
Okay.
And that's different to the previous times when we've seen these sectors bounce in the past, when they sort of, the charts have just, you know, carried on bumping down And the actual underlying commodities weren't sort of like turning up as much as that. And also the engineering stocks and manufacturing stocks didn't start to take off like they have this time.
Mm.
So something different's happened this time. I think
I think
the prices are reflecting a bit of an improvement in the Far East.
Mm.
And some emerging markets. And I think once they start getting going, you've got, you know, virtually the whole world moving in the same direction. Then we've had, like, the West doing well and the Far East sort of falling. But once you can get the Far East starting to move in the right direction as well, and the whole world's well, it starts to build on itself, I think. And I think these minerals, you know, the miners have been great over the last month. I think I doubled my money in Anglo-American and Glencore and the other ones. Kaz Minerals nearly doubled it in that, and I've actually sold out now at the moment. But I think the sector now to follow on would be the engineering sector, and nearly all of those are starting to take off. And also the recruiters, I've noticed they're just starting to bottom out. Things like Michael Page and Robert Walters, they're both making bottoms on the chart that look like a nice curved bottom rather than a...
That's interesting. Because I was chatting with some friends the other day about recruiters, and a lot of them have dropped sort of 20% or more, the smaller recruiters I look at.
Yeah.
The things like Match Tech has constantly put out good news, but the shares dropped from sort of £5.50 or down to about £4.20, and there doesn't seem to be any really real fundamental reason why, other than that it's linked to the oil sector. You know, it has a certain amount of exposure to that. Empresaria is another small recruiter I quite like that's come off quite a bit and looks good value.
I mean, these are probably two. Pelham's another one, isn't it? It's quite.
Yeah, that looks a good quality business. I think
it's held up, that one. It's held up. That's at highs nearly.
Has it? Yeah. Oh, okay. So, yeah, no, I'll have a look at that. Thanks for the prompt on that, Rich.
No, I just don't think that those sectors, that recruiters and the engineering and the mining sectors, if they're turning up, that doesn't sound to me like the end of a. The end of a market, that sounds like the beginning of a market to me.
Yeah, quite.
And so Goodwin, and noticed in their statement that they actually said that they, you know, they've been quite surprised that things haven't been as bad as they were expecting.
Yes.
And I just wonder whether that's the first of many, you know, sort of like, you know, you get a bigger engineering company come out in a month or two's time, because Aggreko, the brokers have just tweaked the forecast up on those, even though they came out and said, you know, things were a little bit... tough, and you know they were battling through, and then after that statement the share price rallied and the brokers' forecast rose. So I think maybe if anything, brokers have been too pessimistic on the sectors, and we'll probably see some good action in there over the coming months.
Yeah, I mean I was looking at the last interim management statement from Goodwin on 17th of March. That's put an absolute rocket under the shares last week, didn't it?
Yeah.
And they seem to have, and they basically, like you say, they said, for the above reasons, we do not expect the next financial year to be as difficult as we had once feared. And they seem to have a nice spread of business across different sectors, don't they? Absorb the downturn in oil and gas. So, yeah, it looks an interesting one. Although, again, I wouldn't personally buy now, just after it's risen, what, you know, 50% nearly.
I think you don't get another chance to get in on that one. I think past history on Goodwin, I think I bought those at about £2 in the past, and I think I held them up to about £17. And they just kept going. They were one of these family-run businesses that just so tightly held, and the chance of getting stock in them is just so difficult that you sort of have to hold on to them like gold dust when you do get them. And I don't think there's a lot of sellers when things are good. So, I think they'll probably go a fair bit higher. I don't reckon they'll give an opportunity for many people to buy a dip on those. But,
well, certainly if you look at what it did in historically in earnings per share, I mean, if it gets back to those sort of levels, then actually the PE would be very low, wouldn't it? Seven or six.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's going to do that in one jump, but it might do over a couple of years, mightn't it? Yeah, I think David Streatter likes that one, because he likes the family-owned business, and Lord Legal likes family-owned businesses as well.
Yeah.
So, you prefer that type of stock as well, and I take it.
I do like family-owned businesses when you can find them that are liquid enough to be able to buy a decent amount, but usually they're always, you know, I think it's like Thorne, is that a family owned one? I'm not sure whether that one is or not, but there's some of those.
Which one, sorry?
Thorpe.
F.W. Thorpe, very nice.
Yeah, I think that's one of the ones that are sort of like maybe got a decent family stake in them, and I'm not sure, but there's quite a few little small cap companies like that, Latham and Cropper and stuff like that, that tend to, when you've got the family involved in, they've done it for years, they know what they're doing,
yeah.
it's when the family disappear and a big conglomerate move in and mess them up. That's when you want to leave.
Tend to be conservatively financed as well, don't they?
Yep.
So that when you go into a recession, those type of companies kind of almost brush it off, don't they?
Yeah.
Or even make some cheap acquisitions. Okay. Should we look at Marshalls next?
Marshalls, yeah. That's a lovely stock, that one, I think. I'm currently holding it. I've been holding that for about a couple of years now. They're just cracking. They came out with some fabulous results and soared away on them last week. They've put on about 15% since those results. And the whole of that sector got sold off, you know, because people think builders are not doing so well, perhaps. And, you know, I think Travis Perkins got sold off because people thought builders are not doing so well. And I'm trying to think, the others got sort of Topps Tiles and Wolseley, you know, things like that.
Yeah, so I mean, this is a supplier, Marshalls, that says it's a supplier of hard landscaping products.
Yeah.
So what do they mean by that? What, gravel and paving?
Yeah, well, they used to do all the gravel. They got a lot. I think they got rid of some of their gravel to Breedon's. I think they put some of their quarries off of them. But they, Howdens now have had Marshalls have had a new CEO there for a couple of years, and they've changed the product line much further to more modern products. So they do like these. They're now doing lampposts that will speak to you and stuff like that, and chairs that, you know, technology stuff that people will have in the high street, bigger margin stuff. And they've doubled their profits over 2 years, and they're set to grow profits again by about 28% this year, on a PE of about 16, I think. So when you're getting that sort of growth, and their products are absolutely superb now. The website's improved greatly, and it's not supplying to households and to just builders. It goes out to doing sort of like big construction work, like facings for the slab, facings for buildings, and in stones like that that go on the side of buildings, and huge great areas of paving.
Yeah.
And their margins are increasing. They've got very minimal debt, really. And they've just announced a special dividend on top of that. So I think that's one that's going to be, you know, reaching new highs before too long.
It does look interesting. Although it's the same quandary as with some of these. I mean, you've had a really good month, haven't you, the last month? All these stocks you're in have kind of gone up about 50%.
Yeah. I dodged a few bullets. I didn't seem to get hit as bad in January as a lot of people did. I think, I don't know what I was in at the time, but I think a few of the stocks that I didn't seem to be thumped too hard. I think if the market was off about 12%, I think I was only off about 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And I'm up about 5 or 6% for the year now or more. So when the markets are down, that's not a bad performance. But I think
absolutely.
Yeah, there's still a lot of stocks out there that are doing quite well, I think. And
it's all down to individual company performance ultimately, isn't it?
Even
in a down market, you know, if a company is trading well, it'll buck the trend, won't it, really?
And also, you've got to be in the right sectors, like builders. You know, I've ignored builders. People keep saying to me, you know, like, builders look cheap, but the charts on builders are not looking like a buy at the moment. They're just, you know, they're drifting down all the time. And when you can find other sectors, like, the mining sector's been moving up, and this engineering sector's been taken off quite a bit, and there's various sort of some of the airlines was doing quite well that I've been in, and stuff like that. So it's about avoiding the wrong sectors, and the retail sector is one just to stay out of the last.
Do you think? I think the complete opposite. I'm not talking about general retailers, but sort of specialist retailers. I'm quite bullish on some of them. I've done really well on Boohoo. And one I haven't done well on is Laura Ashley. but you know, if they drift down, I tend to buy more of them rather than sell them. But,
I think retailers are looking more interesting now than they have for the last, you know, since the start of the year. I don't think I would have touched retailers for love nor money, really, and well, not most of them anyway. They just look like they, when they had this Christmas period where it was so warm, and they all came off and said, oh, you know, the weather's killed us here.
But
and
that creates an opportunity, though, doesn't it?
Because
it's a bit of a one-off thing.
Yeah, because the summer, you're not going to have a bad summer again. If you've had a bad winter, the summer coming up is probably going to be quite good for them. Probably improvement on last summer. So I think probably now the retailers are starting to get to a point where they are worth looking at as a, as an area to buy, and
I agree. Yeah, I mean, Debenhams, I think, is a nice one because they really executed well over Christmas. I mean, I don't like their balance sheet; they've got too much debt. But they, you know, in my experience, from when I used to be in a retailer FD, you know, when if you really execute well at Christmas, that usually means the whole business is firing on all cylinders.
Yeah,
you know, and it'll continue doing well usually if you have a good Christmas. So that one's quite interesting, and I'm just looking down the sheet.
A lot of these retailers, it's not so much, you know, I think Ted Baker, they came out and their results weren't as good as expected, and that was a lot of the clothing retailers. But I think what a lot of people don't realise is people go shopping a lot for clothes, and you then wander into like your DFS and your, you know, while you wander around buying
general
clothes.
General footfall, yeah.
Yeah, and the clothing sector attracts a lot of other people into the other shops. And, you know,
while
people are wandering around looking in Supergroup, they're then going across the road and having a look in at Port Merion Pottery in, you know, one of the stores there, or, you know, they're going into one of the SCS or DFS or stuff like that, which, you know, the clothing shoppers are attracted to. So although they're moaning about the weather, and you think, well, how can weather affect a carpet retailer or something like that? There is a bit of a read, you know, a bit of a cause effect.
There is, definitely, yeah, because of general footfall. I mean, you know, back in the day in the 90s, when I used to manage the finances of a ladies' wear retailer, you know, the weather had a dramatic effect on the takings.
Yeah.
You know, it would literally call, from a sunny week to an overcast week in the summer, would trigger a 30% drop, you know, and if you don't get a cold snap in October, it completely screws up your whole winter range because you've just got a store full of coats and hats that nobody wants. So
I think the only one not affected by the weather very much is French Connection. They're always bad.
Well, I know you hate that stock, don't you? I love it because they're such a nice contrary.
I just read their statement a couple of weeks ago or a week ago, and I read it and I thought to myself, oh, you know, they're sort of, again, they sort of tease you and sort of say, oh, you know, things are getting a bit better, and then when they come out of it, you actually think, well, is that much better? You know, it just wants...
Yeah, you say that, though, but they were profitable in the second half, Rich. I mean, the first half figures were dire. I tell you what, there's a really good trade with French Connection, you know. Every year I do it, you buy after the interim results, because the interim results are always terrible. It's always loss-making, and this year they were particularly terrible. And somebody sold them down to 23p or something. And I just backed up the truck at that level, because you were almost down to sort of net cash, and doubled my money within a few weeks. And then you know, your upside comes from when people see the final results, because the second half is usually profitable, and your cash is at a seasonal high as well. You know, so it's and as they close those loss-making shops, and it's going to take another 4 years, but as they close them, you're then going to get, you know, a really nicely profitable wholesaling and licensing business. I mean, the licensing makes £7 million a year profit.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some lovely bits in that company. It's just I don't think it's got the motivation to get there. When Mark's in charge, he just seems to, you know, it's the same old thing every time. They try to rekindle that FUCK or FCK.
I saw a funny one in one of their shops. It's a T-shirt with a big picture of a beach, and the slogan on it says, "Motherfucking beaches."
Right.
And I thought, God, they're really... You know, they're obviously FCUKIN. They're really they've been milking that for about 25 years, haven't they?
Yeah.
It's a bit painful, to be honest. Yeah. But they brought in two very interesting new directors. I don't know if you saw the the former FD of ASOS, I think it was, has joined them, which is very interesting. If that, you know, as you would expect, would give them a big boost on the online side, and they picked up a non-exec who had a pretty heavyweight background as well.
It definitely needs a big ball change there. If they said Marks has stepped down or stepped aside and become a non-executive chairman, and somebody else was there at the head of it, I think it'd probably be tempting to you know, have a little nibble again. But I'd like him to be out of the way, to be honest. I think he's
he's
in the background, always sort of like, you know.
Mm. I mean, he's old. The big danger, I think, now is that these new directors join, spend 3 or 4 months working there, then walk out saying, you know, they can't work with Marks.
Yeah.
That's the danger, I think.
Yeah.
Because apparently he's very difficult to work with. Okay. How did we get on to that one? Onto that. We were meant to be looking at parity, I think.
No, we were talking about wins. Okay, let's go on to parity then. Yeah, that's quite...
That's PTY.
PTY. I don't know if you saw those in the week. That's a little small cap that's sort of like up your street. They're a recruitment company, and they've got a technology side to them as well that they're getting rid of. And they're going over to recruitment. It's just going to be a pure recruitment company.
Yeah.
The interesting thing in there is that the guy that owned, the previous CEO that owned owned a big stake in them, stepped down, and they've let two new guys take over running the business.
Okay.
Even though the CEO stepped down, while he stepped down, he's still been buying a load more shares while these guys have been in charge. And they posted their results on, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday. The interesting part about that is they made a big loss in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
And then full year results, they actually made a small profit. So in the second half, I reckon they've probably made close to about £1 million profit in the second half.
Oh yeah, here we are. I'm looking at the results. So they've given a divisional split, but they only refer to adjusted EBITDA, which can hide a multitude of sins, can't it? Yeah. And it's $384K in H1, and then $1.2 million in H2.
Yeah.
Do you think that's more than just a, would it normally be seasonally balanced then, or is that an improvement?
I think it's improvement. And also the interesting thing is they've got a guy there that's bought a 5% stake. I forget what his name is at the moment. I could look it up, but he's gone in and he's bought a 5% stake.
Yeah.
And he owns a recruitment company of his own. And these two guys have stepped down. This recruitment company's taken a 5% stake. The CEO and the chairman have taken a back seat, and they've been buying shares even though they've taken a back seat. And there's
quite a few interesting sort of smoke.
Yeah, there's been quite a move around there. So I'm just thinking if they manage to do that well in the second half, the promise they're going forward and getting rid of this technology side, which has just been a waste of time. Really, I don't even know why they're involved in.
Have they given any indication of what the level of proceeds might be from that disposal?
No, I don't know if they've actually got someone to buy it yet, or whether they're actually going to do with it. But it's going to become a pure recruitment play. And I think the next lot of results, you start to get, you know, like a clean idea of what's going on when you see the first half results of the coming year, or you get the next trading statement. But he's bought an absolute. The previous CEO has bought an absolute big stake, Swinstead or something, I think his name is.
P.E. Swinstead, yeah.
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 And he's been buying, even after he sort of stepped down, you know, to keep buying more shares when you've put somebody else in charge.
It's a vote of confidence.
Yeah, it is a vote of confidence that you've sort of found a couple of young guys that know better than you do, I think. So, yeah.
I haven't looked at that one for a couple of years, but I'll take another look at it. I mean, it's very small, 11 million, isn't it?
So yeah.
I'm surprised you were sort of going down to that size level. You're more of a mid-cap guy, aren't you?
Don't be many really small caps now, but there's a few, you know, that sort of hit the radar, you sort of find irresistible, really, I think. And you've got to have a little dabble in it. A bit like, I suppose you mentioned DX Group. Should we mention those?
Yeah, I've lost my nerve on that and sold out right at the low, unfortunately, which just the day before, the directors bought about £750,000 of the stock, which is such bad luck.
You didn't fancy going back in after that or not?
My problem is that the balance sheet is really quite wobbly because of all this deferred income that you've got on the DX exchange, which seems to be the part of the business that's declining. Well, it looks to be in structural sort of terminal decline. The problem you've then got is that you've got all these fixed costs of the DX exchange, of all these depots, you know, where people go in and collect the mail. So you've got fixed costs, declining revenue, and also, as it's a subscription-based model, they get the cash up front. So as the business declines, it actually bleeds cash on two fronts, operationally and you know, because the subscription upfront payments decline. So I just kind of panicked. Well, not panicked, but I just looked at the numbers over and over again, and after a few days just thought, I'm not comfortable with this, you know, and ditched them.
Right. And I thought that was quite a vote of confidence for the directors to put that much money into...
It is. If I'd seen that, you know, if I'd been making that decision a day later, I probably wouldn't have sold.
Right.
But it's one of those situations where I'm not comfortable enough to buy back in, you know?
Yeah, I'd definitely say there's plenty of risk there. You know, you're obviously getting some risk, but when they've nailed the colours to the mast to say that they're going to pay a dividend.
2p dividend, isn't it?
Yes, 2.5p, is it, I think. It works out about, you've got about a 12% yield there at the moment. And,
yeah, but that's not sustainable, Rich, because they're paying it out of borrowings effectively, aren't they, really?
Yeah, I'm just thinking, would they really be doing that if they were strapped for cash going forward?
I don't know. I mean, I think they feel, in their shoes, it looks like they feel obliged to. I mean, you know, you look at stocks like HMV, you know, they carried on paying big dividends right up until the point they went bust. You know, I think if the shareholders are clamouring for the... Because remember, this was floated on it being a high-yield play. Yeah. So they've got a shareholder base who will be banging the table and demanding dividends. That's
but then HMV directors weren't buying shed loads of shares, were they, at the time when...
No, absolutely not.
When they're paying that sort of yield and the directors are buying that many shares, it sort of makes me think that they're either crazy or which can't be ruled out with a director name. You know, in fact, it's almost a prerequisite.
Absolutely, yeah. But no, I think you're right. I think the £750,000 director buying definitely changes things at DX Group to some extent. It's
there's definitely risk there as well, as you say. You know, I wouldn't sort of wouldn't want to underplay the risk that's there at all. But I just feel
are you
that,
currently long on that one?
I bought in. I probably bought your shares off you because I bought the ones. I bought the ones when the directors bought their shares. I saw that morning, and I just had a look, and they'd nailed their mast to that yield, and it just seemed that was just a risk reward play. I wouldn't say I've got that many that it would, you know, harm me if I lost the whole lot. So
no,
it's not going to.
I mean, I don't think there's any risk in the short term. I think it's you know, I mean, it might make a nice short term trade or a 6 month type trade, but you know, I wouldn't want to be holding them in 2 years' time.
Yeah,
you know, if the DX exchange revenues are continuing to drop at 10% per annum, then the whole thing's in real trouble a couple of years down the line.
I also think a lot of stocks seem to have had like this this one hit wonder sort of thing that's just hit them since they've floated. SCS was one, floated, came out, terrible problem, and then they've come back, and then I'm trying to think, Bond Marsh came out, it only floated, wallop, and they took a whack, and it was sort of like, and I'm trying to think who the other ones are as well. There's
N2,
there's quite a few that came out. They've only just floated. Boohoo, that's another one that floated, didn't they? Wallop, and then sort of like
is.
You just think it's something. They either floated at a bad price, and they misled the brokers that they were you know, floating with, or something happened. Something has happened, you know, at a particular timing for these stocks, and they've taken this hit. And I just wonder whether DX is one of those that, you know, they've had a problem, and they can sort it. And you know, like the share price is probably too ambitious to start with and probably gone too far the other way now, maybe. I don't know. But
I think it's a bit different than with them because it's structural with this DX exchange. The big problem with DX was that they hid where the profits were actually coming from. Because, I wrote about this in my blog several times when the shares are up at sort of 80, 90p. I said, you know, my suspicion is that the profits are all coming from DX exchange, which is, the solicitors and accountants and various other firms use this secure mail service. But I asked around solicitors I know, and they said, you know, we're not renewing because documents are going by email now. So it was quite clear that was the reason it was floated, because the core money earner was effectively in terminal decline. So I think that's why DX I would see in a different bracket to things like N2 or Boohoo or Bond Marsh, where, to be honest, I think a lot of these things are dressed up for float. You know, the figures are probably nicely presented and massaged to get the best price they can on float, and then, you know, bang, the cat comes out of the bag and you're nursing a 30-40% loss. Mm. Lake House was another one, wasn't it? Lake House.
Yeah, that's another one.
That's quite good, actually. I bought some of them. I mean, that if they get anywhere near the revised forecast, is going to be very, very cheap.
Yeah.
PE4 or something.
The sector I'm not all that over the moon with at the moment. It's sort of Mears like, you know, Mears are sort of struggling quite a bit. And
I think the government's sort of squeezing social landlords, isn't it?
Yeah.
Imposing cuts in rents or whatever. Yeah.
So that's DX is one that I just think I risk, but potentially I reward as well if that comes good, you know, with the
could be a good trade.
But like I say, definitely just one that we ought to touch on, maybe.
Mm. Okay. Should we go on to McBride next? MCB.
McBride, they had a decent trade set of results in their trading statement. They're due another trading statement soon. I think they're one that, again, the brokers have been tweaking up forecasts. The chart is just doing another little turn up here, and I think their trading statement will be quite good. They look a decent buy at the moment. I'm holding those. I've held those for about a year or so as well.
Well played. It's been a fantastic turnaround there. Operationally, they've cut out 30% of their product lines, haven't they, and focused on greater depth and higher margin products. I mean, it just looks like a really well-executed turnaround by good management, I think.
The new guy that's come in there, Rick DeVos, I think his name is, he's quite a turnaround specialist. And, They talk, promise low and deliver high, and I think that's what they've been doing. Going through, and I wouldn't be surprised if the current forecasts are quite conservative. So I think you're looking at McBride now. What's the price now? It's currently 168, and they're forecast to do nearly 13 pence earnings next year.
Yes,
that's not bad, is it? It's a P of around 12 or 13, somewhere around there.
Yeah, although it's never going to be a high P stock, is it? Because it's supplying products to supermarkets, so you know they're going to be squeezed. You know, if the supermarkets see that they're now making a 5 or 6% margin, they're going to nail them up to a post, aren't they? And squeeze that margin out of them, don't you think?
Well, I don't know, because Swallowfield do a similar thing, don't they? And they're sort of like that one's absolutely gone screaming away just lately, and they've.
Has it?
Yeah, I think probably because it's more about making the brands for those supermarkets rather than doing a McBride actually make the brands for like Tesco and some of those, don't they? Do their home brand stuff rather than, I can't imagine it's that easy for Tesco's to sort of say, well, you're making our own brand, we're going to go to somebody else to make our own brand for that one. It's quite a bit of hassle, isn't it, to take your own brand somewhere and the formulation and find somebody else who make it for you at a better price than say someone
I would have thought that's fairly straightforward for the supermarkets to do. I mean, can't they? You know, isn't the problem with supermarkets that they screw suppliers relentlessly with sort of retrospective discounts and with, you know, charging them for placing the product in certain aisles and do you know what I mean?
That's more if you've got a product of your own, isn't it? You know,
is it?
Tesco. Mm. Well, I think so. I think if if you were sort of like they did with Thorntons, they, you know, like you put your chocolates up on there and you've got your own Thornton's egg on there, they want money out of you right, left and centre. But I don't think there's many people that could make the eggs for Tesco's. There's probably, you know, there's a number of them, but the suppliers are limited that are actually going to what do they call it? They've got a name for their own brand stuff that's made. But you use your own product on there, which I think gives you more of a leeway rather than being squeezed so much. But, you know, maybe that's my way of thinking. I don't know.
I suppose it's all about efficiency, isn't it? If McBride can actually make it lower cost. So I remember when I was talking to Edward Rothskill, he was keen on Finsbury Foods last year when it was about 70p. And he said, you know, he wasn't worried about the supermarket squeezing lower price because they bought all this machinery that automated processes, which meant that their cost prices were lower than the competition, you know?
Yeah.
So there was no one the supermarkets could go to undercut them, you know? So, I mean, maybe it's the same with McBride. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm always sceptical. There's no one about, you know. There always tends to be someone around that can do something cheaper than you, don't they? You know, even if they've got, you know.
Yeah. But no, I agree. McBride has performed very well. I mean, I know I've written a couple of really positive blog pieces on it in the last year on good trading updates. So well done on that.
Yeah, no, it won't be a monster. Like you say, it's not going to be a monster PE that they trade on. But I think if they're expected to do 10.5p this year and nearly 13p next year, you're looking at a decent rate of growth there. And if that's been underestimated, and they do sort of pull out more like, you know, 11.5 or 12p this year, and you're looking at maybe 14 or 15p next year if they're
There's probably 20%, 25% more to be had on that stock, isn't there? I would have thought.
Yeah.
Mind you, the balance sheet's not great. A lot of debt, and I think there's a pension deficit. But it's not a deal breaker, but it's worth bearing in mind, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, Okay. On the beach, OTB, right. The next one.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen this. Have you ever looked at these?
I really liked it. Yeah, I really liked it when I first looked at it at £2. But forgot to buy any, and it's since shot up to £2.75.
They're trading out. Update came out and it was like quite a really good trading statement, I thought. And the beauty is they're sort of like one of the only pure online holiday place.
Yes.
So, you know, they've got none of the planes or the legacies that the likes of Thomas Cook and all that have got. And they're just pure, you know, book the holiday internet business, but they're not trading on anything like an internet rating, if you ask me.
They're not. No, 17.5x forecast.
Yeah.
That's an average of this year and next year.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think that, I mean, with this one, because it floated not long ago, I want to wait a year to see how the numbers settle down for the reason we mentioned before.
Yeah.
You know, but I've been through the prospectus on this one in with a fine tooth comb, and I can't find any funnies in there.
No, it looked good to me, and I actually saw it when someone told me about it just before it actually took off, and I think I ignored it. And then someone said to me, "Have you seen on the beach?" And that trading statement had come out, and I'd missed it, and it had gone, you know, it had gone bonkers from a, you know, very low base. It had gone from there, but when I expected,
it's come off a bit more recently, though, hasn't it?
And
it's doing one of those chart moves where it suddenly dropped, and then it's kind of creeping back up again, which is usually quite positive, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think where it's a new float as well, there's some obviously some people that were in before the float have got a big profit out there, and they're just taking that anyway when they're sort of able to do so. So I think, you know, it's a chance to take advantage of a bit of stock being about where you can. Because I think after that trading update, you couldn't buy for love nor money. You go in there to buy a couple of thousand shares, and the price went bonkers. So
The big spike in January, February was partially caused by Small Cap Share Watch, as they've got a big following, haven't they?
That's it. Yeah.
My only slight reservation with this is that, I mean, it's nearly all UK business, and I don't know whether their formula will translate overseas. And their overseas ambitions seem very modest. They're only going for, I think, Benelux and Scandinavia. And you think, well, why aren't they attacking another major market? You know, how much more growth is there? That's the only drawback, isn't it? Really,
yeah. You know, I'm happy to see them sort of like get a, you know, do really well in the UK first before they start going too mad abroad. You get start running so many different countries at a time, then you can end up getting out of depth, can't you? But there, I would have thought the website translates quite easily across to other countries.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really understand how they make such high margins as well. I mean, their forecast profit margins are absolutely fantastic, you know, sort of 20% operating profit margin. And you think, well, how do they manage that when nobody else does in the sector, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's cutthroat, isn't it, online holiday stuff.
Yeah, I think we're...
So I'm a little bit, I'm a little bit suspicious about that, to be honest, but...
Yeah. That's one that I sort of, that's one that I'm sort of, I bought recently and I've been adding to, and I think they'll... You know, be one to worth watching. And being it's not an AIM stock as well, it's fully listed. So,
is it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I did like that when I looked at the numbers, but as I say, I'm just a little bit sceptical at the moment. But yeah. Okay. What do you want to cover next, Rich? I think we've nearly finished, haven't we?
Covered quite a few there, haven't we? I don't know.
You mentioned JDG. Is that Judges Scientific?
Oh, yeah, they've got their results on Tuesday, so that'd be one.
Oh, okay.
Do you hold those at all? Or?
No, I've looked at it a few times and really, really like the CEO, David Sisrell.
Yeah.
Class act, isn't he? It's just, you know, 9 or 10 really good acquisitions he's made. Yeah, it seems a nice business.
Yeah, I think they're especially sort of... it's buy to build, but with cash that you've made, which is sort of like different to a lot of... these other buy-to-builds where it's issue shares or load yourself up with loads of debt.
Yeah.
And I like the sort of style of that, buying a really low PE earnings enhancing acquisition and doing it with cash that you've made mainly and increasing
or he'll take
the
on
earnings.
He'll take on a little bit of debt, won't he? And then,
you
know, the company he acquires on a low multiple basically pays off that debt over the next 2 or 3 years or sooner, 1 or 2 years. So it's, you can keep doing it. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I bought it first time round at just over £1.
I remember, yeah.
And and I think I sold out about £17 and then they still raised on about £23. I thought myself at 17, that was probably fully rated. I think I bought back in, I think I've tickled in a couple of times waiting for them to recover. But if you have a look at the chart on that now, that's making sort of like a quite a nice little bowl shape since
it is, isn't it?
May last year. It's almost like you could almost pour your tea into that one and
No, I like that one. And the forward PE on it's 14.4. The dividend yield's starting to become, not in 0.6%, but you don't really expect divvies with that type of stock. So at least that bonus, isn't it?
Yeah.
So good management, reasonable, solid balance sheet. So it's I think it's a good one that.
I think
nicely
that
diversified.
The results on Tuesday will be comfortably in line. Well, usually that's code from them for they usually are really comfortable when they're comfortably in line. So it'd be interesting to see. And they were talking about the weak pound being beneficial to them.
Actually, that's a very good point. Because last year. A lot of companies complained that the strong pound was hurting them. So as a sort of general investing theme, now that the pound's weakened quite a bit, it's worth revisiting those companies from last year and seeing if that will give you a nice tailwind this year, isn't it?
Yeah, and also I think that's one of the things that are helping the engineering companies that I was mentioning as well, like Weir Group and...
Good point, as are UK-based exporters.
Yeah. So they're benefiting from a weaker pound, I would think.
Although it's very volatile, isn't it? I saw that the pound moved from sort of 150 to the dollar down to about 140 and then up to 143. So it seems to be kind of all over the place, doesn't it?
Yeah, so I think part of the Brexit worry in it. And the other part is the dollar. I think they did something to make the dollar fall a little while back. Talking about that G20 meeting, some organised thing to knock the dollar down. I don't know whether that's true or not. But.
Oh, yeah, I picked up on that on CNBC. I think they said Janet Yellen had still done something to weaken the dollar and to boost US earnings or something. So on Brexit, I gather from your tweets that you're firmly in the out camp.
Yeah, I think we should. Why don't we let, you know, sort of like all this nonsense. It's prostituting ourselves, really. You know, I keep hearing people say, oh, you know, we might lose... if we leave the EU, we might business might fall by about 0.5%. But blimey, it's your democratic right you're talking about here for the sake of a few quid. Do you want to forever be told what to do by a bureaucracy that's unelected, or retain your democracy and be able to throw out the people that do the things that you don't like? But
exactly, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, no, I'm totally of the same view. I had an interesting chat with a guy the other day. He said that, he was a former MP actually. He said to me, the issue is historic. You know, the other 26 countries in the EU have all, at some point in the last century, been invaded and occupied by either Germany or Russia.
Yeah.
And of course, the whole of the Eastern Bloc, that's up until quite recently, up until about 25 years ago. So basically, they are all prepared to, and Germany is scared about its own power, so they are all, to some extent, prepared to trade some of their sovereignty in return for joining being a member of the EU, and thereby guaranteeing that they will never again be invaded by Germany or Russia.
Yeah.
You know, whereas that's totally different to Britain's situation. You know, we've had with the longest running sort of continuous democracy by a long shot.
Yeah.
We haven't been invaded for several hundred years. We don't need to trade away our democracy for any kind of security guarantee. We've got our own nuclear weapons, you know. So I think it's, you know, and people scaremongering, oh, a few jobs are going to... Yeah, are we not going to trade with Europe? That's absolutely rubbish. Of course we'll. Everything will basically continue as normal. We'll just be, a few years of disruption. I've set myself off.
Well, yeah, and also I think a lot of these countries, they're not used to the democracy we've had, have they? You know, when you look at Poland, what they've had when Russia was sort of like controlling them, and a lot of these Eastern Bloc countries, and even sort of like Greece had a dictatorship going there, and Spain, and sort of, you know, the generals all in charge in these countries. They're used to such oppressive regimes over the past, 30, 40, 50 years, that being in the EU now is like freedom to them. You know, they wouldn't understand freedom from our point of view, so...
No, I agree. And, I mean, Spain was fascist up until, the 1970s or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, Franco, I think it was. I got rid of him. It was all going out there on holiday then. And
That's right. I mean, the other thing I think is that, what the EU did in providing a sort of framework for the Eastern European countries to become democratic and so on was actually very good.
Yeah,
I think that's the main success of the EU. You know, if the EU hadn't existed, we could have ended up with some really nasty dictatorships in those Eastern Bloc countries. Poland doesn't look as if it's too great at the moment. So I think the EU has served a useful function in doing that, but that doesn't mean Britain necessarily has to be part of it.
No. I totally agree. So that's the worry at the moment for the market. I think there's a bit of, I suppose we'll end up staying in. I think there's too many cowards about to stick their head above the parapet.
I think we'll stay in realistically, even though I passionately hope we leave. I think the trouble is, when faced with an uncertain choice, the British electorate nearly always vote for the status quo, don't they?
Yeah.
And they'll be scared into doing so, because most of them don't really understand any of the issues. Yeah, so just on a final point, Rich, you set up your own private bulletin board a little while ago.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering how that's going.
Oh, it's fabulous, yeah. We've been having a great time on there. I think most of the guys there have been involved in the mining bounce that we've had, and, I think we've all had some really cracking buys there lately, and it's a lovely place to be. It's nice and friendly. Everyone's sort of positive towards each other rather than the negative vibes you get from... ADVFN and the like. It's very constructive rather than destructive, and we're a nice bunch of lads and lasses all chatting away and making good money. So
brilliant.
Yeah, I'm very pleased.
It's a bit like the thing Michael Walters used to do years ago, wasn't it, where he charged a subscription fee and then he had a private sort of friendly bulletin board and his articles and so on, and it was a really good format, I think.
I never ever got involved with that. It was a bit before my time. I used to read Walters in the paper, but I didn't sort of get involved with his chat room. I don't know what he actually did. But, this is it's all together. There's general banter and stuff like that as well, which is fun.
Yeah.
There's none of the trolls that lurk around there to stab you in the back 1 minute and make the profit out of you the next. So,
well, exactly. I mean, I think the the ADFVFN bulletin boards, I think, are just dreadful. I mean, unfortunately, you know, when I've had one too many lagers, I sometimes go on there and poke the trolls with a stick, and I shouldn't do really, because it's otherwise it's just a ghastly place, isn't it? And I find it brings out the worst in me as well, you know.
Yeah.
If there's all these people abusing you and just being absolutely vile to each other, you tend to get sucked into slanging matches and just soul destroying.
Yeah, well, I can't say I miss it at all. It's been in actual fact, they actually banned me in the end. I think because I had an ad on, I thought it was an information exchange, so I put the information about my chat room on the thread there.
Oh, and they bought ADFVFN bandages.
They took that off and banned me, and I think they probably wanted me to go back there, you know, phone us on such and such a number to... Well, I've never bothered phoning them back. I've got no interest in
Well, I think being probably a badge of honour, to be honest.
They'll keep the trolls. They're happy to keep the trolls with six handles, but they want to ban anybody that's sort of like, doing a decent job on it, I think. So that's.
Well, I know. And you, I mean, your board on ADVFN got New Rebels Den, wasn't it?
It was
fantastic. You know, you put up all sorts of interesting and generally successful stock ideas, and you put a lot into the community. But I don't blame you for pulling out, given that you were just constantly being harassed by trolls.
Yeah.
So is the window of I know you do sort of windows where people can join your private board. Is that window currently open or closed?
Yeah, I've actually left it so that the reason I really didn't want to be have subscriptions sort of dragged out all the way through the year, so it was ongoing.
Yeah.
So if ever I stopped it, then I would be in a position where I still had to keep running it because people had 9 months left there and 6 months left there. So
block annual renewal. Yeah,
so they all end in July. But what I've actually done for a few people now is said, like, you know, you're only getting 10 months, so there's between now and July. And so there's a pro rata sort of deduction from the annual subscription. So anybody sort of joining now would get a slight reduction, but their subscription would still end in July. January next year, and it'll January next year. And
so if people are interested,
people can still join.
Can they contact you? What's the best way to contact you, or would you prefer they didn't?
Rebel at cockneyrebel.uk. Oh, sorry, rebelhq at cockneyrebel. I better check my own email address. And let me just make sure I do that. I've got one for the business and one for the whatever. So it's Rebel at cockneyrebel.uk.
Okay, rebel at cockneyrebel.co.uk.
No.co, just rebel at cockneyrebel.uk.
Sure, have we covered everything?
Yeah, I think we've pretty much covered everything there, and hopefully I think the sector rotation, I think the market's going to be a good market. I did post on ADVFN before I left there that I think this is one of the big bull markets starting, one of the better markets that we've seen for a very long time, and people sort of like laughed. But I do think that. I think this year will probably be a very good year because people were so depressed thinking it won't be a very good year. You know, and it's a contrarian view, I think, but it's...
Oh, I've got to post some of my shorts then.
That's it.
Yeah. No, well, that's very interesting. Thanks for that, Rich. And you give me some great stock ideas there as well that I'm going to follow up on. Brilliant.
Okay.
Well, thanks very much for your time, Rich. I really
appreciate
it.
Hopefully we'll talk again, and we'll be out of the EU next time.
With any luck.
yeah.
Take care then, Rich.
Cheers, Paul.
Cheers now.
Bye. Bye-bye.